At Honda, we like thinking. We think, how about a rear parking camera in every Civic so you can squeeze into small spaces? And wouldn't 0% finance with a £500 deposit contribution make it easier to afford? Why not visit your nearest Honda dealer for a test drive? See what you think. Selected dealers registered by 31st of December 2016. Petrol models only while stocks last. 0% APR representative. Terms and conditions at honda.co.uk.
Wednesday, November 11th, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single week, and we release one every Wednesday. You can subscribe to it on iTunes. You can make sure that you never miss an episode. We'll bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports. If you would like to contact me, a couple different ways you can do that. You can email the show right here, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Got a thought? Got a concern, got a question, need some advice, whatever it might be, dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y. You can also check us out on Twitter. You can look at us on Facebook. Those are both the same, Daily Dose Sports. You can find us there as well. If you'd like to head over to the website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com, put out some new articles every single week. Put links to the podcast up. If you just want to listen to it there, you can always do that as well. A couple different ways that you can get a hold of us here at the show. A couple things. First off, happy Veterans Day. Those of you who serve our country, we appreciate what you have done or are doing so much. Would like to throw that out immediately and just say thank you to all the veterans. A happy Veterans Day to you. We do appreciate all that you have done for our country. Do you realize that this is our 50th show. This is our 50th show. Our 50th podcast. Today, you are listening to the 50th podcast of The Daily Dose. How have we done 50 shows? Honestly, I don't know. I don't know. But we have. So today is number 50, something that I am a little bit proud of. Would like to thank all of you for listening. You make this all possible. Thank all of those who support, all of those who click on it, all of those who subscribe, and all of those who have helped me personally do the show. There are a million of you out there to thank. I'm throwing my thanks out to each one of you for making 50 shows even possible. Today on the show, we have a couple different things. We're going to talk some NFL. Got a lot of stories to get to in the NFL. There's a number of things going on. Want to look at the path of the top college football teams, and are they really going to make the playoff? We saw the playoff poll come out last night. Got an idea of where some of the teams are at. Want to take a look at the path of a few of the teams and see, do they really have a shot to get to the Final Four? Got to hand out some baseball awards. You know, baseball is over. World Series is finished. We're done with baseball for probably another, 2 weeks till spring training opens, something like that. Going to hand out a few baseball awards. Got a few awards that we're going to hand out. I'm going to give you my opinion of who I think should win certain awards. And as we always do, we're going to hand out a few awards that are Daily Dose style. You know how we do. And then, as usual, we have our Daily Dose Top 5, a very, very popular segment on the show. Always hear some comments, get some feedback on the Daily Dose Top 5. You might agree with it. You might disagree with it. You might say, what about this person or that player or this instance or that, whatever it might be. Always get feedback on the Daily Dose Top 5. Very popular segment. You want to make sure that you stick around for that. A couple of things coming out in the world of sports today. First off, the Indianapolis Colts looks like they're going to be without their quarterback, Andrew Luck, who is going to miss at least a month with a lacerated kidney and partially torn abdominal muscle. Now, the reason that I bring that up to you is because if you'll remember last week on the show, I spoke with Big J and I said, they're telling us he's got a rib injury or that he's got multiple broken ribs is what they were kind of saying. They were like kind of hinting at it. Well, he's got multiple broken. Well, maybe he does. For one, they weren't really putting him on the injury report. So what's that about? Come on, Colts. You're accusing other teams of cheating. Stop cheating. The Denver Broncos, they made sure to get him on the injury report this week. Because if you saw, there was a play in the fourth quarter when he scrambled up and kind of dove. Danny Trevathan just absolutely blasted him. I'm trying to think of who it was. Another Denver player came in and hit him in the back. Now he's got a lacerated kidney, and they're saying that he could be out a month. Now, I realize that there's probably a severity to different injuries. Everybody's got, you know, different injuries. But just don't forget, Keenan Allen with the San Diego Chargers just got put on IR last week with a lacerated kidney. Somehow, Andrew Luck's kidney's not lacerated as much. I don't know how that works. I don't know exactly how that works. Are there like stages of lacerations in your kidney? This one's like a third grade. This one's like a third degree. This one's like a first. I don't know how that works. But Keenan Allen was done for the year. Andrew Luck, they're saying, is going to be back in a month. I don't know if I believe them. And right now, I'm going to be honest, I don't know if I believe a lot that comes out of that Colts franchise. A little bit concerning. Someone else who's going to also be out is Denver cornerback, Bronco quarterback Aqib Talib. He is going to be suspended. Wait. Let's go back real quick to the Andrew Luck thing. There's not any chance that we're going to hear like the Colts accusing Bill Belichick of lacerating Andrew Luck's kidney, are we? I don't know. Just wondered. Now, back to Aqib Talib. Denver Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib has been suspended by the NFL for poking Colts tight end Dwayne Allen in the eyeball. If you watch the game on Sunday, we're going to talk a little bit about the Broncos here in a few minutes. If you watch the game on Sunday, Aqib Talib saw Dwayne Allen kind of jawing with Von Miller, took up for his teammate, and promptly went Bobby Boucher and jammed his fingers in his eyeball. Interesting that he got a game suspension on that. I'm not going to say it's not warranted. If nothing else, I think he should be suspended just for stupidity. But interesting that he got a game suspension, because we have seen players poke eyes in the past and not get suspended. It wasn't that long ago we saw a New England Patriots player, Vince Wilfork, poke a player in the eye, Brandon Jacobs with the Giants. He got suspended for a game, but they actually reduced that to just a fine. I know, it's the Patriots. I know, it's a kinder, gentler NFL that we're going with these days. Interesting to me, though, that they would change that for them. Here's a story that I don't know if it's getting the coverage that it should get, but we talked about this a few weeks back on the Daily Dose. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman declared on Tuesday that daily fantasy sports constitute illegal gambling in the state of New York. And he sent DraftKings and FanDuel cease and desist notices saying that they could no longer they can conduct business in New York, but they could no longer accept wagers from New York residents. Now, if it happens in New York, could it move on to other states? Could we start seeing a federal law that this is, in fact, gambling? We know there are a number of states out there who have already said that this is gambling. Now it's in New York. That's getting a little bit bigger. I've told you in the past, I absolutely, this is without question gambling. I know they're going to try to spin that this takes some sort of skill. But I can put grandma on FanDuel and she might win some money. I can put a very savvy sports fan on DraftKings and they might lose all their money. That's gambling, folks. Spin it however you want to. I wonder if they'll be like, you know, this week on DraftKings, enter promo code. Uh-oh. I don't know. Makes me wonder. Keep an eye on this, because I want to see where this ends up going. I know they're going to push back on this. I know this is going to be fought. I know this will be appealed probably 50,000,000 times. But if you shut down New York, can you get this where it's only going to be illegal in like, you know, Vegas and like some offshore groups? I don't know. But I told you a while back, I thought that this might be coming. You might not have saw this. One more story I just want to get to real quick. The Miami Heat have made a trade with the Memphis Grizzlies. And when I first look at this trade, the Miami Heat have traded Mario Chalmers to the Memphis Grizzlies. They send Chalmers and former forward James Ennis to the Grizzlies. Now, the Grizzlies are a team that needs shooting. The Grizzlies are a team, they have toughness, they have defense, they need shooting. They get Chalmers in this deal. Now, Chalmers is a guy that brings defense, which they already have, brings some toughness, which they already have, and also brings a really inflated sense of self and inflated sense of shooting, which they absolutely don't need. Very kind of bizarre to me. the Heat will get in return from the Grizzlies. They'll get Beno Udra, who you might not realize this, but he actually played on the Slovenian national team with Goran Dragic. So that might be just a plan to try to get two teammates together. And they also pick up forward Jarnell Stokes. This is a good move for the Heat. I don't like this trade for the Grizzlies. I'll just throw that out there. We'll talk just a little bit of NBA here in the next hour. You know how we do. We'll try to get to a little bit of NBA if we can. Let's jump right in. Let's go over to the NFL and let's talk about those Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos were knocked from the ranks of the unbeaten this week. And, you know, I don't know if the defense was too busy reading about how great they were or what it was. They were being compared to the greatest defenses of all time. And don't get me wrong, the Denver Broncos defense is still very good. Do not forget, because right now you're starting to have some people pile on the Broncos. I get it. I understand. You went out and you absolutely laid an egg against a team like the Indianapolis Colts, who is a sub-500 team, not a great team right now. But keep in mind, the 85 Chicago Bears gave up 38 points to Miami that season. So slow down on, well, I guess they're not as good as we thought they were. Well, they might still be. They might still be pretty good. I'm not going to put dirt on them just yet. It's just kind of weird. Here's something to keep in mind, though, and here is where my concern is with the Denver Broncos. My concern with the Broncos is that offensive line, which I still think is horrible, and I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. It's bad. It's not going to get a whole lot better. You've just got to hope that they can duct tape and get some baling wire and try to hold that offensive line together. Here's the other thing I want you to keep in mind. The offensive teams that have given this Denver defense the most trouble have been teams with good offensive lines, quarterbacks that will stand in the pocket, don't try to run, don't get flustered, don't get rattled. They'll stay in there. They might have to take some punishment because this Denver defense is going to come after you. It's going to dish out some punishment to you. And then these offenses have fast wide receivers that run really precise routes and get open as quickly as possible, and you try to get the ball out to them as quickly as you can without taking too much punishment or possibly, you know, having a turnover. Think of the teams that have given the Broncos problems. Minnesota fits that mold. Offensive line's pretty good. Teddy Bridgewater, tough kid, stands in there. They've got all those fast wide receivers. They just try to get it to them, let them run with it. Indianapolis Colts did the same thing. Colts line was pretty good. Andrew Luck stood in there. Yes, he's athletic. A lot more athletic than we give him credit for, but he stood in there. He took some big hits. They've got some quick wide receivers. He was able to get the ball to them. And when you think about it, isn't that exactly how the New England Patriots are built too? I don't know. That concerns me a little bit. As bad as it was for the Broncos this week, They could be the Green Bay Packers, who have basically been pummeled for 2 weeks in a row. The Panthers beat the Packers on Sunday 37-29. And if you just look at the score, you go, oh, that's not that bad. They lost by 8. They had a chance. They were driving at the end. Aaron Rodgers throws an interception. Not that bad. That doesn't really tell the whole story. Do you realize at one point in this game, the score was 37-14? Green Bay Packers have some problems. Now, they may figure them out, and don't get me wrong, they've played two very, very good teams. They've played two teams that are probably in the top four in the league, back-to-back weeks. But let me give you a statistic, and this might surprise you just a little bit. Let me throw out this statistic to you. Not a huge stats guy, but I want to throw one out to you. When we think of great quarterbacks, you know, historically, the great quarterbacks, we think of on some level, we think of like fourth quarter comebacks. You know, Peyton Manning has 43 fourth quarter quarterbacks or comebacks. You can spin that however you want. Yes, they were down for some reason, but he was able to will his team back and to get the win. Peyton Manning actually has the most in NFL history now. 43 fourth quarter comebacks. Tom Brady, Dan Marino, they each have 36 fourth quarter comebacks. I don't think anyone's going to question the kind of quarterbacks those guys are. John Elway retired with 35 fourth quarter comebacks. Guys like Joe Montana had 31. Here's a stat for you. Did you know that Aaron Rodgers is 0-25 when trailing by two scores in the second half? Rodgers in his 10-year career, you can't sit here and say, well, he's only been playing for 3 years. He's been playing for 10 years. 10 years in his career, he has just 9 fourth quarter comebacks. Now, some of that, to be fair to Rodgers, some of that is His teams jump on you early. They put up a lot of points, and then you're trying to play catch up the whole time. So he's not behind. Some of that is, I don't know. He didn't look so good the other day, did he? When they were he was trying to bring that team back. I mean, and I know, you know, he lost Jordy Nelson and he's got some problems, but if it comes down to it, if they don't jump on you early, that game's over. You know, we might have to talk sometime on the show. We might have to discuss if you need a fourth quarter comeback all time, who do you want? Think about that. Who do you want? If you need a fourth quarter comeback, some of the guys I just named, oh, they were good. Really, really good. Different personalities, different personas, each one of them. You had a guy like Marino, who totally wore his heart on his sleeve. You could see it. He'd be screaming at his receivers. He'd be yelling at his linemen. He was fired up. He was going out doing some things. You had Joe Montana, just Joe Cool. Hey, we're going to get this. Hey, look, John Candy's in the crowd. Joe Montana was just that guy. You had guys like Tom Brady, kind of a mix of the two. Every once in a while, you'll see him get a little bit fired up, but he's pretty cool in the pocket, at least. Doesn't show too much. Doesn't get too agitated back there. You had John Elway; he could get fired up at times. Just different personas for different guys. Like I said, we may have to talk about if you need a fourth quarter comeback at some point. Who would you want back there? You can think about that and maybe formulate an answer for yourself. I told you a few weeks back that when the Miami Dolphins fired head coach Joe Philbin, they were going to win a few games. That's just how that works. When there's a new man in charge, everyone is kind of on alert. Everyone is kind of, hey, we better get it going. And everyone's going to play very, very hard. And emotion in sports can be very, very powerful. And to be fair, they played some really awful teams. The Miami Dolphins beat the Titans 38-10. And then they beat the Texans 44-26. And Dan Campbell had taken over for Philbin. And Dan Campbell was running the Oklahoma drill, and he was yelling, and he was grunting a lot. And people were starting to say, hey, the Dolphins are back. They might be a contender this year. But see, there's one thing that the average fan at the bar doesn't understand. And that's why I'm always fortunate that with the Daily Dose podcast here, I have intelligent listeners. I have people that maybe think through sports just a little bit more than the average guy down at the bar. Because if you're down at the bar or you're out in a public setting where people are watching sports, you will hear these inane things like, well, you know, the Dolphins just wanted it more this week. The Broncos this week, they just didn't play with much emotion. See, but emotion can only last for so long. Remember before this season, people were talking about how the Patriots were going to go on some revenge tour this year, and they were going to show the NFL we weren't cheaters, and we're going to show everybody, and it was going to just be this revenge. That stuff doesn't last but more than a week or two. You can't carry that all year. It doesn't work that way. No one can carry that all year. You can go out before the game and say it, but you can't carry that kind of emotion every single week. Oh, we're mad again this week. It's tough to do. And it's really, really hard. And it doesn't last. Just like the Miami Dolphins win streak didn't last. Do you know how you win games in football or in athletics in general? It's not emotion. A lot of people, well, you got to be fired up. You got to be, they're just not into it this week. This team just wanted it more. That's not what it's about. You know what it's about? It's about having really good players. And it's about executing whatever it is you're trying to run. It's about execution in whatever it is that you're trying to run. The end. That's all. So Miami, they get by on that emotion because, let's be honest, physically, they're probably more talented than the Titans and the Texans. But then in the last 2 weeks, they run into the Patriots and they run into the Bills. Two teams that have very, very good players. And more importantly, two teams that execute far, far better than the Miami Dolphins do, at least this season. We see this team on defense. They're loaded with athletes. You look at the Dolphins, you're like, why aren't they better? Because they can't execute anything. They've got guys like Ndamukong Suh who won't even listen to their coaches, who just does whatever he feels like doing. That's why they're not better. At the end of the day, it always comes back to players and execution of those players. You can talk about rah-rah and emotion and wanted it more and all that BS all you want to. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. And in the last 2 weeks, playing against good teams who actually execute, the Miami Dolphins have been beaten by a combined score of 69-24. Emotion is completely out the window. But hey, I guess it was fun while it lasted. The Minnesota Vikings beat the Rams 21-18. The Vikings are now 6-2. Do you realize if the playoffs started today, the Vikings would be playing at least one game at home? But that wasn't really the story of the game, actually, when the Vikings beat the Rams. The story of the game was when Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer called out the Rams after the game for being dirty and for knocking his quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater, out of the game. Early in the fourth quarter, Teddy Bridgewater scrambles. He slides. Now, to be fair, these last-second slides that these quarterbacks do, you're taking your chances when you do this stuff. You run straight at a defensive player. Right as you get to him, you hop down like you're sliding into second. He doesn't know what you're going to do. He dives at you and takes a shot at you. Yeah, you might get tattooed, and that's exactly what happened here because Rams cornerback LaMarcus Joyner absolutely decks Bridgewater. Bridgewater was literally asleep on the field, unconscious. Pretty scary play, really. And of course, we all know that Rams head coach Jeff Fisher, his teams have a history of kind of pushing the boundaries on this stuff. They're going to hit you a little bit late. They're going to try to knock your quarterback out of the game. They're going to, you know, maybe go a little bit low. He has this reputation. And coupled with that, don't forget Rams defensive coordinator Greg Marshall was the guy that basically orchestrated Bountygate when he was down with New Orleans. So when Zimmer calls out the Rams for basically being dirty, and he said, you know, we play by rules, we don't go out and do that dirty kind of stuff, they did. They're kind of a dirty team, and he calls it out. Now, let me explain to you what's really going on there. Now some of it is him saying, I think that Jeff Fisher runs kind of a dirty program. His players are taught kind of hit to the echo of the whistle. His players are taught if they get a chance to hurt you, try to do it. There is some of that there. But understand this, because I actually saw this back when I was coaching. We actually had some of these issues. This has less to do with Zimmer having a personal issue with Fisher, as strange as that sounds. Coaches are in this weird kind of fraternity, and you have a mutual respect for what each other does. You see each other a lot more than like the general public thinks you do. Like there were coaches for rival teams. I wouldn't say we hung out with, but we saw a lot. I mean, you see him at clinics, you see him at meetings, you got to go to league meetings, you got to go to all this stuff. You kind of get to know each other. Yes, they're on the other team and maybe you don't like that aspect of it, but it's rare that you really have personal beef because you're going to see each other all the time. So it's kind of tough to have this personal beef. It's going to be awkward if you do. Here's what Mike Zimmer is trying to accomplish with calling out Jeff Fisher, calling out the St. Louis Rams. Here's what he's actually trying to accomplish, because it might be a little bit different than what you're hearing in other places. Oh, he's telling him he's got a dirty team. That's not what it is. See, Mike Zimmer has a good young team. He has a good young team that might be a contender in the NFC. As odd as that may sound, the NFC, it's kind of open. I mean, you got the Panthers, you got the Packers, and then I don't really know who you have. Who's the next team? Cardinals, maybe? So you got maybe three teams over there, and then I guess I would probably put the Vikings right in there. Zimmer understands that. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to bring this team together. And what he's saying is he's saying, hey, I'm going to protect my team, so I'm going to call them out. And then I can go to the meetings later and say, hey, I called them out. I told them, because no one's going to do that to you. No one's going to play dirty with you guys like that. I won't stand for that. And he's hoping that this young team that hasn't been together very long start to come together. He's going to hope that this kind of bonds that young team together. And by standing up for them publicly, it might kind of galvanize this young team that he has, because they actually have an opportunity to at least be somewhat of a contender. You've got a good running game. You've got at least a solid defense. And you've got, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, if he's healthy, he's got some weapons there to kind of, they could be a pain. And by standing up for this team publicly, that's what he was trying to do. I really doubt he really has a personal vendetta against Jeff Fisher. Yeah, he probably thinks he's dirty. I get that. But it was probably more about protecting his team. A couple games to look forward to in the NFL this week. There are a few decent games that you're going to want to keep an eye on this week. The 4-4 Bills go to the 5-3 New York Jets. And don't forget that Rex Ryan, now with the Bills, is coming directly from the Jets. What I want to see in this game, really, is which team has a healthy quarterback. If Tyrod Taylor is healthy, I like the Bills in this game. I think Tyrod Taylor totally, completely changes what they do. It looks like the Jets would rather play Ryan Fitzpatrick with like one hand and put an oven mitt on the other hand or whatever. They don't care. Just anything we can do so we don't have to play Geno Smith. We would rather do anything. We would rather play Ryan Fitzpatrick with one arm tucked into his jersey than we would go to Geno Smith. Speaking of Geno Smith, Rex Ryan, because he is the kind of guy that he is. And I don't have a beef with Ryan. I think he's entertaining. I mean, he's a big dumb animal. But Rex Ryan, he has named his Bills, one of his captains this week is IK Inampali. You remember, the guy that punched Geno Smith in the face when he was with the Jets? He's going to go out for the coin toss this week for the Bills. I mean, I guess Rex Ryan says that he likes to name guys captains who have a history with the team that they are opposing. And so he has named Inampali a captain for this week. If I were the Jets, I would totally send out Geno Smith. Send him out there and tell him, make sure he keeps his helmet on. Send him out there with the like $600 that he owes Inampali. Here, dude, hopefully this calms you down and you're not as angry. If they don't name Geno Smith as one of the captains this week, I am going to be sadly disappointed with the New York Jets, because that would be a perfect opportunity for them to do so. The Jets can't stand Geno Smith. They can't wait to get rid of him. I'll say that. Because when Ryan Fitzpatrick went down, you could tell that even though Fitzpatrick has this whatever's wrong with his hand, even though he had the issue with his hand where he couldn't, they were still like, we still kind of trust you more than Smith. We feel like with one hand, you're still better. 6-2 Vikings. Speaking of those Vikings, the 6-2 Vikings go to the 4-4 Oakland Raiders. Now, the Raiders are at home this week, sitting at 4-4 after that secondary allowed Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown to have 17 catches for 284 yards. Did you not know he was the guy you needed to stop? I mean, the Steelers have kind of run out of options. Big Ben's hurt. Le'Veon Bell is hurt. They're running out of people. They're like, well, you know what? We're just going to throw it to Antonio Brown. And everyone to this point kind of says, well, whatever we do, we can triple team Antonio Brown. They don't have anybody else. The Raiders are just like, nah, single cover him. We got Charles Woodson back there. We're fine. Are you? And, you know, can we put a stop to the nonsense of people saying that Charles Woodson might be the defensive player of the year? He's got a couple interceptions. Nice job. But after watching him flailing, chasing Antonio Brown up and down the field, I think he's still out there chasing him up and down the field. He still hasn't caught him yet. Can we put a stop to that? You got a couple nice interceptions. You're probably a Hall of Fame player. You've had a phenomenal career. Stop it. The Raiders defense, if there is a weak link, it is the Raiders defense. And if there is a weak link on that defense, it is their secondary. Slow down on Charles Woodson being the greatest player who ever walked the planet. Here is the problem for the Oakland Raiders. What they are facing is what a lot of young rebuilding teams have to go through. When you beat the Ravens earlier in the season, no one expects it. Everyone's like, oh, wow. Wow, the Raiders, they won a game. It's kind of, not bad. And then, remember just a couple weeks ago, they beat the Jets. And you're like, oh, wow. You know, the Raiders, actually, they're not bad. Here's the problem. This week, you're 4-4 at home against a young Vikings team. We don't know exactly what the status is going to be of Bridgewater. They're saying that he's going to play. We'll see what his status will be. This is kind of a game that you have to win. This is kind of a game you're expected to win. I'm picking the Raiders in this game. I think that they should win it, but this is where a young team either has to step up and say, okay, yeah, we really are for real. We really can win these games we're expected to, or you're going to go back under 500 and kind of be, yeah, they're not quite there. They need a few more players. Keep an eye on the Raiders and Vikings this week. The 8-0 Patriots go to the 5-4 New York Giants. I'll be honest. If this were the Super Bowl, I would totally pick the Giants. But it's not the Super Bowl. So I'll take the Patriots by two touchdowns. Because the NFC East is so horrible. The 6-2 Cardinals go to the 4-4 Seahawks. You know, the Cardinals have a two-game lead in the NFC West over the Rams and the Seahawks. This is a really, really pivotal game because either the Cardinals go up three games or it drops down to one and all of a sudden anything could happen. I mean, the Seahawks could still win the division. Forget getting in as a wild card or any of that stuff. If the Cardinals go up to Seattle and drop this game, the Seahawks could still win their own division as bad as they've been. And they still have some issues. You're going to see some of those issues on Sunday in this game. Don't have a very good offensive line. Defense is not what it used to be. They've got some issues. The Cardinals are capable of taking advantage of those issues. But you better take care of business, Arizona. When you have the chance to step on their throat, you might want to take that. Hey, let's shift over to Major League Baseball. I told you, you know, the World Series has come and gone. It is now over. And we've got to hand out a few awards. The Kansas City Royals beat the Mets in 5 games to win the World Series. We've got to give out a few awards. Now, there's going to be national awards handed out. There's going to be each of these awards handed out. Let me give you my picks for who should win these awards. American League MVP. A couple different guys that I guess could get it. A couple different guys that are capable of winning this award. My pick for AL MVP has got to be third baseman Josh Donaldson with the Blue Jays. He had 33 more RBIs and 18 more runs than Mike Trout. Mike Trout might be the best player, but Josh Donaldson did it when he had to. He got his team to the playoffs. Blue Jays went clear to the ALCS. I go with Josh Donaldson on that award. Over on the National League side, I know everyone's giving it to Bryce Harper. For the MVP, everyone's going to give it to Bryce Harper. I'm not going that route. You don't get the MVP when your team completely underachieves and you choke and completely miss the playoffs. I don't give it to Bryce Harper. Again, best player might not be the most valuable player. And if your team didn't do anything, then really, how valuable were you? Not that valuable. It doesn't work that way. My pick for NL MVP is actually going to be Yoenis Cespedes with the New York Mets. You know, when he was traded to New York from Detroit, keep in mind that the Mets were one of the worst offensive teams in the league. They went from worst to best with just that trade. So Cespedes gets the MVP for me. I know that's not going to be a very popular vote, but that's who I'm going to go with. Over on the AL, got to give it out Cy Young, best pitcher in the American League. I'm going to give it to Houston Astros pitcher Dallas Keuchel. You know, the lefty edges out Blue Jays' David Price. You know, he allowed just 4 unearned runs all season compared to Price, who had allowed 10. ERA between Keuchel and Price, very, very comparable. Keuchel won 20 wins this year. Price finished the season with just 9 wins. So I've got to give the advantage to Dallas Keuchel. Had a phenomenal season despite the ugly beard. Over on the NL, is it just a beard thing? I don't think I could be a pitcher these days. You got to have an ugly beard. My NL Cy Young winner, also sporting the big ugly beard, got to be Jake Arrieta with the Cubs. You know, the numbers between him, and I realize that everyone's saying, how could you not give it to Zach Greinke? But the numbers between the two are close. And Arrieta was great in the second half of the season coming down the stretch. Dude finishes with 22 wins. He has a 1.77 ERA and 236 strikeouts. And again, for me, you've at least got to win some important games. You've got to beat teams when it matters. And so he edges out Zach Greinke for me. AL Rookie of the Year, I'm going to give it to Houston Astros shortstop Carlos Correa. Kid, you know, he actually played 99 games. But he finishes the season with 22 home runs. You know, on-base percentage was .345. Seems like a really, really good kid. If he had played a full season, he's probably getting 30 home runs from the shortstop position. I'm going to give it to Correa. Over on the National League side, my Rookie of the Year, I struggle a little bit with this one, but yes, overwhelming favorite. I'm going to overlook all of his postseason errors and give it to Cubs third baseman Chris Bryant. We didn't even know if he was going to be a Major League player this year. Finishes up with 26 home runs. has a .369 on base percentage. Chris Bryant struggled a little bit in the field, but yes, he ended up being our rookie of the year for the National League. My AL manager of the year, a little bit tougher. Some good teams over there. I'm tough on this one. A couple different ways I could go on this. I'm going to go with Texas Rangers, Jeff Banister. Remember during spring training when Yu Darvish goes down? And then about halfway through the season, the Rangers are just kind of struggling along. They're like five games under .500. They traded for Cole Hamels, and we were like, well, that's cute, but it's not going to really do anything for them. Down the stretch, down the second half of the season, the Rangers go 46-27. That's got to be worth something. No one expected them to be in the postseason. No one expected him to push Toronto the way they did. I got to give it to Jeff Banister. Did a phenomenal job with the Texas Rangers. On the National League side, I know there's going to be a few people not happy with this one, but I've got to give it to the Cubs, Joe Maddon. Yes, I'm giving out a lot of awards to the Cubs. It's the Cubs. They actually made the postseason. It doesn't happen very often. People enjoy it when you can. I'm going to give it to Cubs, Joe Maddon. Now, you look at the Cubs, and you say, well, yeah, but look at the talent they have. Look at how much guys, look at the pitching they have. Look at some of the bats. They've got a pretty good team. Well, yeah, it's easy to say when they go 97-65, we look at it and say, look at all the talent they have. But don't forget, it was just last year they only won 73 games. And in 2013, they only won 66 games. And in 2012, they only won 61 games. Maddon did something right. He did something to change that clubhouse and to get that clubhouse to start feeling differently about themselves. And it was very, very effective. Whatever it was that he did, it completely changed the way that they operated on a day-to-day level. It completely changed the Chicago Cubs. I got to give it to him. Now, you know we got a few more awards to give out. You know how we do here on the Daily Dose. We've got to give out a few different awards, you know, for a couple of special achievements, I guess you'd call them. Our first award we're going to give out this year is going to be the Norman Award. The Norman Award is given, it's named for Greg Norman, who you might remember in the 1996 Masters just had the most massive collapse ever. Was up six strokes going into the final round on Sunday. And was limping along and at least looked like maybe he'll finish it out. On holes 9 through 12, Greg Norman adds up here and goes bogey, 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 double bogey. There went the lead. All completely gone. And it reminded me so much of this year's winner. This year's, Major League Baseball Norman Award winner, they were supposed to run away with the division. The division is going to be a piece of cake. They'll run away with that. And they're probably a favorite for the World Series. They had a two-game divisional lead on July 31st. So coming down the second half, where we saw teams like Texas, we saw teams like Houston, we saw teams like Chicago, and some of these teams really start to pick it up in the second half of the season, this team actually went 19-23 down the stretch. And they're loaded with talent. It is not that they are talentless. They have a ton of talent. The defense that we thought would be excellent actually wasn't even good. And the offense that we thought would be adequate actually was horrible. This team completely misses the playoffs. Your Norman Award winner, the Washington Nationals. Who else could it go to? They've got a poisonous clubhouse. They've got chemistry issues. They've got problems back in Washington. Our next award that we're going to hand out is going to be the Bill Belichick Award, which is given to the biggest cheaters in the sport. And I don't really even know, do I really even need to explain that? I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. We give this one to the biggest cheaters in baseball. This year, it's going to be a little bit of a surprise. Because you might think I was going to give this to Alex Rodriguez. Because all of a sudden he comes back after the suspension and all the stuff and all the drugs. And he comes back and has a huge year. Is he cheating? Yeah, probably. He probably is. But I'm not going to give it to him. I'm going to give it to the St. Louis Cardinals for hacking into the Houston Astros' internal database. The Cardinals have a rep as one of the model franchises in American sports. And they got caught cheating doing this? Yes. They truly are patriots, if you will. Let's give out the Steinbrenner Award. The Steinbrenner Award is named for George Steinbrenner, of course, who loved to overpay his roster even when it sometimes didn't make sense. Now, to take you behind the curtain just a little bit and be a little bit transparent with you, it was really, really close on this award. Like, I considered naming this award the Jerry Jones Award. You know, makes sense. The Jim Buss Award. We could have named it the Jim Buss Award. Could have named it the Daniel Snyder Award, even. But we're going to give it the Steinbrenner Award. And this year, the award goes to a team that spent. Now, when I say this, you're going to say, oh, that's not that bad. This is before luxury tax. Luxury tax would be piled on top of this. This team spent $2.4 million per win on their roster. A roster that, despite spending over $3 million with that luxury tax, wasn't really built to win. Like, when you look at this roster, you're like, oh, they're loaded. They have this huge roster. They're really not that good. They didn't have a fourth or a fifth pitching starter. They didn't have any middle relief. They had bats. Well, they could produce a little bit against the pathetic division that they were in. But when they went out and actually played the big dogs, suddenly we saw their bats completely disappear. And they couldn't generate any kind of scoring. Our Steinbrenner Award this year, of course, goes to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Who else could it go to? Our final award that we are going to hand out, when we hand out some baseball awards here for the Daily Dose, our final award that we are going to hand out this year is going to be the Ostrich Award. Now, the Ostrich Award is given to the franchise that just hides their head in the sand and ignores all of their problems. They never look to improve in any capacity whatsoever. They simply collect the gate from their fans and they pocket all of it without spending any of it on their roster. And they just say, hey, we don't want to hear. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. I don't want to hear about how bad things are. I don't want to hear about how we can't get pitching. I don't want to hear about we don't have players. I just want to collect my gate. Just give me the money. Give me the money. Give me the money. This year, your winner of the Ostrich Award, well, actually, for the 24th year in a row, goes to the Colorado Rockies, the hometown Rockies. Come through and get an award. You knew they'd be on here somewhere, didn't you? You knew that was coming. All right, let's shift over to college football. Enough of baseball. We're done talking about baseball. I'm not talking about baseball anymore. Sorry, John. Not talking about it. Not going to do it. Not going to put my toe back in that pool for a long time, at least until spring training starts, which is probably in, what is that? I don't know, 2 weeks? 10 days, something like that. College football. The second playoff poll came out last night. You're going to have some people up in arms. You're going to have some people that are very upset. You're going to have some people saying, oh, look at these biases and look at how the playoff poll is getting this wrong and they're making mistakes. Understand the point of the college playoff poll. Let me ask you this. What's the reason for it? Why do we have this college playoff poll? Because there's really no reason to issue it. I mean, you could simply just go to the end of the season and say, okay, here it is. Here's who made it. The reason that they issue this poll, because it really is meaningless, is just to get us to talk about it. That's it. They're hoping it makes you mad. They're hoping that your team is on it or your team's not on it or your team's being underappreciated or your team's being overappreciated. Whatever it is, they are just hoping to generate conversation during the NFL season. That's the only reason they have it. Let's take a look at it real quick. And don't get so mad about it if you're offended by it. Number one, hey, they beat Florida State. Surprised me a little bit. We're going to talk about them in just 1 minute. The Clemson Tigers come in at number one. I still think they're a little bit overrated, but we'll talk about that in just 1 minute. Number two this week. Now, this surprises me a little bit. Alabama. Because we kind of forget, we're kind of pushing this to the side. When we see Alabama beat LSU this week, we kind of push it aside. Yeah, they did lose a game. They do have a loss this season. In fact, they have a loss at home to an Ole Miss team that is kind of looking average, to be honest. Alabama comes in at number two. Number three in the college football poll, Ohio State, undefeated, returning national champs, the whole bit. Yeah, it's their number three. Number four, another team I want you to keep in mind, Notre Dame has played Have they played a good schedule? We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Number five on this list, undefeated Iowa. Number six, undefeated Baylor. Number seven, a team that lost their first game to Northwestern, Stanford. Number eight, Oklahoma State, got a big win this week against TCU. Surprise TCU this week. Number nine, LSU, and the number 10 team in the college football poll right now is Utah. Now, I told you last week, I expected Florida State to come out and kick Clemson. But let's be honest, and I watched a good portion of that game. Florida State isn't very good. We just expected Clemson. It wasn't that we were overly impressed with Florida State. We just expected Clemson to be Clemson. I want you to take a look at the remaining games on this Clemson schedule. They are at Syracuse. That's a win. Syracuse is horrible. Then they are home against Wake Forest. Wake Forest might be worse. They are at South Carolina. Rivalry game, but South Carolina, you know, Spurrier resigned. And then they're going to have an ACC championship game most likely against North Carolina. Folks, Clemson might make the Final Four this year. They don't play anybody that could beat them. Florida State was probably the last chance because the rest of these teams, I believe Clemson can probably beat. Wow. Clemson in the Final Four? Really? Now, Alabama smacked LSU on Saturday, 30-16, and that Bama defense has gotten it going. Do you realize the Bama defense held Leonard Fournette to 31 yards on 19 carries? While their own running back, Derrick Henry, put up 210 yards and three touchdowns. When do we start talking about Derrick Henry and the Heisman candidates? I mean, shouldn't he kind of be in that mix by now? Derrick Henry's putting up some numbers, and he's a big, big kid. Here's their remaining schedule. And Bama already has the one loss. Another not loss for Bama. There's no way they can get in. Here's their remaining schedule. This week, they go to number 17 Mississippi State. They face Charleston Southern. They go to Auburn. They're going to win all those games, aren't they? And then, in the SEC championship game, they will see Florida. Tough schedule. Really is a tough schedule, but I think Bama is just loaded. I think Bama is probably going to be in that Final Four. I don't know if they're going to be two. I don't know if they're going to be one, but I think they probably are going to make it because I think all those games, those four remaining games on their schedule are winnable for them, especially the way that they're playing now. They've figured some things out. And that defensive line, you've got two, maybe three players on that defensive line that honestly, if it wasn't for the fact of just their age and what the year on their birth certificate says, they would probably already be in the NFL. They're that good. Number three, Ohio State. You know, of all the teams on this list, let's take a look. Clemson, Bama, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Iowa hasn't done anything. Baylor hasn't impressed anybody. Oklahoma State. Everyone else has played somebody. Of all the teams in this top 10, has anyone done less than Ohio State? And I know that you might be sitting there saying, well, wait a second. They were the champions last year. What difference does that make? What does that have to do with anything? Since when does being the champs last year mean that you just get to skate through this year and it's just automatic? It's not like you return the entire team and you just say, oh, yeah, well, they're exactly the same team. Stop telling me about how they're the best team. And every time I hear someone in the national media come on, they're sitting there saying, well, we can talk about it, it's all we want, but Ohio State really is the best team. Maybe. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying, how would I possibly know? Because when I watch them, they don't look like the best team. They look exactly like Florida State did last year. And we kept saying, well, no, they really are. No, they really are. I know they don't look very good this week against, you know, Northern Illinois, but they really are the best team. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure. Now, they're going to start playing some tougher teams. I have a hard time just penciling them in there. I mean, do we just take the scores from last year's games, or do we actually play the games out? That's tough to me. It's a little bit of a stretch. Maybe the change at quarterback kind of gets them going, and that all kind of changes. But when I look at their remaining games this week, Ohio State is at Illinois. Yeah, Illinois is horrible. Home against number 13 Michigan State. That'll be a test. Michigan State has some issues. Michigan State lost this last week to Nebraska, but kind of got riled. But Michigan State, they'll be tough. At number 14, Michigan. Another tough game. Jim Harbaugh gotten that team playing a different brand of football. And then a possible Big Ten championship game against, looks like probably Iowa. I guess worst case scenario would be Wisconsin. That might be the toughest stretch of any of these teams. Ohio State might have the toughest stretch. So while we look at Ohio State and say, well, they haven't done anything yet, if they're going to get through, they're going to have to earn it. Because Michigan State, they're going to be pretty tough tests. Whoever they get in the Big Ten championship game, maybe. Maybe. We'll see. Number four in the poll this week, of course, is Notre Dame. And I'll be honest, I have been impressed with the depth that Brian Kelly has recruited at Notre Dame. They lost their starting quarterback, Malik Zaire. They lost their running back, Torian Folston. They lost starting defensive tackle, Jaron Jones. They just keep winning. But now that this season has shook out and we start looking at their schedule and we start looking at their strength of schedule, let me ask you this, Notre Dame fan. Who are your best wins? Who are your big wins? Who did you beat? It's kind of odd when you look at that schedule and you think back to who some of the teams are that are on that schedule and you say, well, you lost to Clemson, so we can't count that. Your best wins are to Navy, number 20 right now, and to probably Temple, who's sitting at number 22. Those are your big wins. So as much as Notre Dame has looked good and they have found ways to win despite all their injuries, we can kind of look at this team right now and say, well, yeah, but you haven't really beat anybody. You beat Navy and Temple. Think about that for 1 second. You beat Navy and you beat Temple. Now, to be fair to Notre Dame, yes, that's still better than what Baylor has done for now. To be fair, that's still better than what Iowa has done for now. But it's still not that great. Everybody talking about Notre Dame and the great schedule that they've played, I'd like to know who you beat. Here is their remaining schedule, and this is what's going to hurt Notre Dame as we get down the stretch. Versus Wake Forest, Wake is horrible. Versus Boston College, might be worse. At number 7, Stanford. Now, that could help Notre Dame. If they could go to Stanford and beat Stanford, that would give them a little bit of a boost. That might push them up in that realm where they could conceivably get to the number 4 if everything falls right. Here's the problem for Notre Dame. You're not in a conference. You don't have a conference championship to bump up that strength of schedule. So when all these other teams are playing conference championships and we see Bama playing someone like Florida and we see Ohio State playing someone like Iowa, we see, you know, even Clemson playing someone like North Carolina, Notre Dame is at home doing nothing. That could hurt them as we come down the stretch. Notre Dame could get left out with just that one loss. Even if they go through and they beat Stanford, Notre Dame could get left home with just one loss. Games this week, a couple games that you probably all want to keep an eye on. This couple might be under the radar a little bit for you. First one, number 2 Alabama goes to number 17 Mississippi State. I just can't see Mississippi State able to run at all on this Bama front seven. Alabama front seven looks just so good. They are just crushing anything in their way. I like Mississippi State. I like watching Dak Prescott. I just can't see any way that they can even give Bama a game in this. Here's a game that if you're flipping through the channels and you happen to find it, I would encourage you stick around and at least keep an eye on it. And it might not really be on your radar, but number 21 Memphis at number 24 Houston. And I realize that Memphis, you know, slipped up this last week and fell to Navy and they got, you know, beat. Now, Memphis is kind of in a weird position because, yes, they're probably not going to contend for any big bowls, but they can beat up on their own conference a little bit. Could they beat Houston? Here's the thing about this game that you sit there and say, why am I going to watch Memphis versus Houston? Both teams are averaging 44 points a game. If you like offense, if you want to see probably a game that's going to come down to the wire with both teams going back and forth and scoring, you're probably going to want to watch this game. It should be an interesting game. That's on the road, but I might take Memphis in that game. And the last game I'm going to give you, number 12, Oklahoma, goes to number 6, Baylor. Hey, Baylor finally plays a real team. I think Baylor has played like literally every single college in the state of Texas now, and they finally run out of teams, and they actually have to go outside of Texas and play Oklahoma. because they've played like Rice and Texas State and North Texas and South Texas and East Texas and West Texas, and they finally run out of teams and they're going to have to go over and play someone. Now, here's something to keep in mind with the Big 12. Remember the Big 12 and how they got shut out last year, and Baylor and TCU were right there, and then neither one of them got it in the Final Four. The Big 12 desperately needs one of these teams, either Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma State, or Oklahoma, to completely win out in November and not suffer a single loss. Because if they don't, and even if they do, but if they don't, they're getting shut out of the playoff again. They're not going to get into the playoff. If Baylor loses this game to Oklahoma, Baylor's not getting into the playoff. I can tell you that right now. Oklahoma has a chance. If they were to roll through November, they'd have a chance at least being in there. Okie State, same thing. TCU, same thing. But if any of these teams stumble and they kind of beat up on each other over this November, that we're going to start seeing TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, we're going to start seeing these teams start playing each other. If any of them stumble, Big 12's not getting in. Just kind of, and if they don't get in again, if they have a second year where they don't get in, Big 12 might have to change how they do business. One, here's a couple, or two easy ways that the Big 12 could improve what they're doing and get into the playoff. One, schedule somebody. And two, you might have to go to a conference championship. I know, Big 12 doesn't want to hear that. But when you schedule all the Easterns and Southerns and, you know, these teams, there's, I believe it's like TCU, they've played every single team that has like a Central in their name. I mean, start scheduling somebody if you want to be in the, you know, with the big dogs. Baylor, you're not impressing me with what you've done. I know you're putting up huge numbers. I know they look like they could be good. I can't tell if you're any good or not because you've scheduled no one. Let's shift over. Talk really, really briefly about the NBA. It is early in the season, but the Golden State Warriors are 8-0. 8-0. Now, my question, I told you at the beginning of the season, I told you in the preview, I expected Golden State to take a little bit of a step back this year. My concern in watching them, and I'll be transparent, I'm kind of rooting for Golden State. I love the brand of basketball that they play. Can they continue to play at this high of a level? I mean, the Warriors are playing like November actually means something. And we know that in the great scheme of things, it doesn't. It's a long, long season, Golden State. Save something for at least after New Year's, because it's a long, long year. If you're not sure about how long of a year it is, just ask Kobe Bryant. Because the Lakers are sitting at 1-6, and just 7 games in, Kobe is already like, so we done? Can we close it out? Sat out last night with the back injury. The Lakers look horrible. Remember, and this goes for anybody, I'm not just picking on Kobe, it's just universal. Peyton Manning, name the player. Father Time is undefeated. And it's starting to look like Kobe Bryant probably should have retired, you know, last year. And by last year, of course, I mean 2012. Hey, as we do every single week, the Daily Dose has got to get to the Daily Dose top 5. It is Veterans Day. I told you earlier, you know, the Daily Dose would like to thank every single veteran who has served our country. It's something that I think is something you should take pride in, something that as Americans, we should thank our veterans for the time that they put in and for the, you know, the effort that they put in serving this country. Do you realize we have some really, really great athletes who have served in our military? And I'm going to be honest, I started putting together this list of top 5, you know, best veteran athletes. Man, it's really, really tough because there is a ton. I could read a laundry list of players that you say, how did they not make it? I tried to whittle it down to the best. I tried to whittle it down to the absolute best. We will do our best to list the 5 greatest veteran athletes. Number 5 on our list. Here's a guy who enlisted in the Naval Academy out of high school. He ended up being a civil engineer at the Naval Submarine Base in Kings Bay, Georgia. But this kid, he came out and he wasn't really expected to be the athlete that he ended up being. After high school, after he enrolls in the Naval Academy, He grows 7 inches. And he becomes a top prospect at Navy. He entered the 1987 draft, was drafted by the Spurs, even though he still had a 2-year commitment to the U.S. Navy. He honored the commitment. He stayed in it. David Robinson was the 89 Rookie of the Year. He was the 1995 Most Valuable Player of the League, was a 2-time NBA champion in 1999 and 2003. And, you know, he doesn't get talked about that much in that regard. David Robinson was one of the greatest centers to ever play in the NBA. I mean, what couldn't he do? Rebounding, had it. Scoring, had it. Could go inside, could go a little bit outside, could battle for his size. For a guy that you looked at him and you're like, oh, he's kind of thin. He could battle with anybody. I mean, he was having to bang against the Akeem Olajuwons, against the Shaquille O'Neals. David Robinson was a phenomenal, phenomenal player, one of the greatest veterans to ever play. Number 4 on our list. Gotta be the winningest by percentage, the winningest quarterback to ever play. This guy enrolled in the Naval Academy in 1961. He won the Heisman in 1963. He graduated in 65, and he actually could have requested assignment to stay in the United States. He didn't. He chose to go overseas. He did a 1-year tour in Vietnam, served as a Supply Corps officer, drafted by the Dallas Cowboys in 64. He just didn't join the team until he fulfilled all his obligations to the Navy. He joined the team in 1969 at age 27. Roger Staubach was a 6-time Pro Bowler, 2-time Super Bowl champion, and his winning percentage is the best of quarterbacks ever. He had a 77% winning percentage as a starting quarterback. Roger Staubach is definitely one of the greatest veterans who ever played. Number 3 on our list. Now, this guy, and we got to go back a little bit on these guys. You got to keep in mind, some of these players, you know, you start jumping into world wars and stuff, and all of a sudden you're professional athletes are getting drafted. Your professional athletes are joining up with the military, and they're going over right in the middle of their career, right in the middle of their prime, and they're going over and they're serving, you know, their country. But Ted Williams joined the Red Sox in 1939. In 1941, he posted a .406 batting average, batted over .400. Last player to do so. He won the Triple Crown, which is best batting average, most home runs, and most RBIs in 1942. Then, in his prime, he leaves, served 3 years in the Navy and in the Marines. He trained as a pilot, returned to baseball in 46. So he misses 3 seasons. In 46, he wins the AL MVP, gets another Triple Crown in 47, and then actually went back and served as an aviator in Korea. Do you realize that Ted Williams flew 39 combat missions? He went back to baseball in 1954 and was the AL batting champ at 57 in 1957 and 1958. He was 39 and 40, and he was still the AL batting champ. Ted Williams was definitely one of the greatest veteran athletes ever. Number two on our list. One of the greatest fighters ever. In my personal opinion, and I know this is going to anger some people, this is going to say, well, wait a second, greatest heavyweight of all time. He was 66-3 with 52 knockouts. And Joe Louis held the title for 12 years. Now, during his reign as champion, he actually enlisted in the U.S. Army. And what Joe Louis would do is he would travel around, he would fight, he would put on exhibitions, and he would just try to boost morale among the troops. Joe Louis was actually awarded the Legion of Merit Medal when he got out of the Army. You might not have realized Joe Louis was in the Army, and he actually went by choice and went just to raise the spirits of the other guys that were fighting. Joe Louis, definitely one of the greatest veterans and one of the greatest fighters to ever live. Number one on our list, greatest veteran athletes of all time. And like I said, there's a million different guys I could name. When you think of this, Joe DiMaggio, Jackie Robinson, Yogi Berra, Don Larson. You might not realize John Wooden served in the military. Rocky Marciano, Nolan Ryan, Tom Landry. I mean, there are a million guys out there. Phenomenal, phenomenal athletes, great coaches, great players. Number one on our list, greatest veterans to ever be you know one of the best athletes ever. Now, in my personal opinion, greatest baseball player of all time. Let me throw out some stats to back that up. And I know you're going to say, whoa, this guy did more. 680 home runs. 3,283 hits. Seriously? 338 stolen bases? He won 12 gold gloves. Willie Mays made every All-Star game from 1954 to 1973. He was Rookie of the Year in 1951, drafted in 52 for the Korean War. So he actually goes over and serves in Korea, missed 266 games while serving, but Willie Mays was still a 24-time All-Star. He was the series World Series champ in 1954. He was a two-time National League MVP. There you have it. Willie Mays, our number one top five veteran athlete of all time. Would like to wish all the veterans out there a happy Veterans Day. Thank you so much for all that you have done. Thank you so much for serving our country. Next week on the show, going to be talking some NFL, going to be talking some college football, going to get to a little bit more of the NBA, and at some point, I'm probably going to start talking a little bit about college basketball. That is warming up and getting ready to get going at any time. If you get a chance, head over to iTunes, give us that 5-star rating, and give us a quick review. We appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this show without you. I appreciate all that you do. Hope that you all have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next week.
Small businesses. Direct Line guarantee to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.